The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. It is Thursday, October 10th, 2019. So as I was saying, if you have any kind of crime, call it a high crime if you want, call it a misdemeanor if you want, but if you have a crime and the purported victim says, I wasn't victimized, or no, the offender you mention, he didn't do anything to me, or no, the offender you mention is my friend, I like him, he never did anything wrong to me, then you pretty much have no case. Well, you have that with President Vladimir Zelensky of the Ukraine, with President Trump. Here's the Wall Street Journal front page this morning. Quote, Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky denied that President Trump tried to pressure him during a July phone call that is now at the heart of an impeachment inquiry in Washington and a messy U.S. political scandal. There was no blackmail, Mr. Zelensky told reporters at an all-day press marathon in Ukraine's capital Thursday. During the call, Mr. Trump pressed the new Ukrainian leader to look into the activities of his political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden in Ukraine, and into alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 presidential elections, according to a rough transcript released by the White House in September. The revelations thrust Mr. Zelensky, a former comedian and political neophyte elected in April, into a partisan fight in the U.S. on which Ukraine depends for help fending off Russian aggression. On Thursday, Mr. Zelensky said his country should probe whether Ukrainians interfered in the 2016 election, adding that he didn't know whether any meddling actually occurred. I think the Ukrainians should investigate this themselves, Mr. Zelensky said. It is our business. It is very important for us that we never interfere in the elections of any country in the future. In response to a question on whether Ukraine would investigate the Bidens, Mr. Zelensky said he wanted to avoid influencing the 2020 U.S. elections at all, saying, quote, I do not want to interfere in any way with the elections of an independent country called the United States of America. He said you should choose your president for yourself. Close quote. That's the story from the Wall Street Journal. Now, do you notice the media bias even in this report? The Wall Street Journal says Trump, quote, pressed Zelensky. Listen to the sentence. During the call, Mr. Trump pressed the new Ukrainian leader to look into the activities of his political rival Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden in Ukraine and into alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential elections, according to a rough transcript released by the White House in September, close quote. First of all, it's not a rough transcript. It's the only transcript that exists done by intelligence officials. Sometimes it's known as a readout, but this is exactly what happens with every call between parties. I don't know why they have to throw in the word rough. But the rest of the sentence isn't right either. It's what you might call fake news, but that's the narrative, isn't it? Trump did not press the Ukrainian leader. What does press mean to you? Pressure? Strong arm? Bribe? Blackmail? Why not just use a normal word, which is asked? Why is it press? Why not just use asked? And Trump did not ask about his political rival. As a political rival, he asked about a former vice president, Joe Biden, who bragged about firing a prosecutor in exchange for giving the Ukraine U.S. aid. And it is beyond weird because the fired prosecutor was looking into the activities of Joe Biden's son. It wasn't two things, as the Wall Street Journal reported. There was no need for the word and. It just wasn't two things. It was one thing about the Bidens having to do with corruption, and it was about another thing entirely in a different part of the conversation about Ukrainian influence in the 2016 election. So here's a hypothetical for you. If Hillary Clinton had bragged about firing the prosecutor in the Ukraine, and if Chelsea Clinton were making $50,000 a month off a Ukraine company at the same time and was inspected or being inspected by that prosecutor, would all just be fine and dandy because Hillary is not a declared candidate for president? Well, of course, but not because she's not a candidate and Joe Biden is. Because what if it was not Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton, but let's say Marianne Williamson and her daughter or her son who was involved in getting a prosecutor fired? I mean, is she immune from any prosecution of any kind simply because she's running for president? She would have more immunity than Hillary Clinton in that case, wouldn't she? Because Hillary Clinton isn't running for president. So more we should investigate Hillary than Marianne Williamson in this hypothetical. Give me a break. We have been told the president is not above the law. Exactly. But why isn't that true of Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton or Marianne Williamson in my hypotheticals? Is Joe Biden above the law merely because he's running for president? And if that's the criteria, running for president puts you beyond inspection and beyond the law, then certainly that should apply to Donald Trump, shouldn't it? But Williamson, Clinton, Biden, none of them are beyond the law. And I don't think the president is beyond the law. Is he below the law now that we know he isn't above it? That's an interesting question. He has to investigate what happened in 2016. Got it. Perfect. The Democrats and Robert Mueller spent 2 years investigating what happened in 2016, having to do with another country, indeed having to do with an enemy of the Ukraine, Russia. Now that Joe Biden bragged about firing a prosecutor in another country in exchange for money, how is it that Trump, wanting to investigate that, is the one being blamed for a quid pro quo? What Joe Biden did is the textbook definition of a quid pro quo. But I guess what? If you declare for president, you're above the law in a way that evidently nobody else, including Donald Trump, is, because he's declared for president, too. But he's not above the law. Now, you know why I call this whole thing Kafka-esque. Do I need to define Kafka-esque? Merriam-Webster has it as having a nightmarishly complex, bizarre, or illogical quality. I think I just showed you that. I take the use from Kafka's book, The Trial. A fair summary of that plot offered by Wikipedia is that one day, Joseph K., the chief cashier of a bank, is unexpectedly arrested by two unidentified agents from an unspecified agency for an unspecified crime. Close enough to what's happening here yet? Do you know what Joseph K. calls the lie, quote, the lie turned into the rule of the world, close quote, in his words? What is the lie, Kafka says, is the rule of the world? Exactly this, as it was said to Joseph K., quote, you don't need to accept everything as true. You only have to accept it as necessary, close quote. Okay, I give you the Democrats. What they say is not true. It is only necessary. Necessary for what? Well, obviously to get Trump, to get Republicans, or to quote Representative Democrat Al Green from May on MSNBC, and Green was the first to draw up impeachment resolutions, let me quote, I'm concerned if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected, close quote. So, we now know what this is about, don't we? Truly playing politics with the Constitution and truly trying to use the apparatuses of law and politics and position to affect the 2020 election. Nothing Donald Trump spoke of. He didn't say anything about the 2020 election. That's how you affect 2020, by the way, by doing and saying what Al Green and Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are doing and saying. Not by asking about corruption of a former vice president or about something that happened in the 2016 election. Jonathan Cappell is a professor at ASU. I believe he's a bit on the left, but he doesn't write ideologically in an op-ed in today's Arizona Republic. He does write this, quote, some constitutional protections like due process and equal protection implicitly introduced other ideals, such as a strong belief in justice and a belief in fairness. These have carried far beyond the realm of government, so our American sensibilities are offended by unfairness in every context of contemporary life, from the schoolyard to college admissions to the football field, close quote. Yes, but what of unfairness to a political party? What of denial of the original constitutional protections of free speech? And what of due process and equal protection in politics and law within the government? As the White House counsel wrote to the impeachment Democrats 2 days ago, and I believe this to be incontrovertible, quote, as you know, you have designed and implemented your inquiry in a manner that violates fundamental fairness and constitutionally mandated due process. For example, You have denied the president the right to cross-examine witnesses, to call witnesses, to receive transcripts of testimony, to have access to evidence, to have counsel present, and many other basic rights guaranteed to all Americans. You have conducted proceedings in secret. You have violated civil liberties and the separation of powers by threatening executive branch officials, claiming that you will seek to punish those who exercise fundamental constitutional rights and prerogatives. All of this violates the Constitution, the rule of law, and every past precedent. Never before in our history has the House of Representatives, under the control of either party, taken the American people down this dangerous path you seemed determined to pursue. Quite right. So when you hear the Democrats talk about the president shredding the Constitution or being a clear and present danger to our country or the Constitution, ask yourselves just what is it that is their example? And ask yourselves, what is it they're doing right this very moment? I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. Give me a call. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you're feeling run down, don't have the energy that you used to, it's probably because you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. I've started my commitment to balance of nature, and I'm following the footsteps of my friend and radio colleague Sebastian Gorka, who's been with Balance of Nature for months now. Seb can tell us just a little bit more about this program as well.
Seth, one thing you're going to notice is you're not going to get sick as much. You're going to find you go to the office and everybody around you all might have a cold. Maybe you used to be the first person in the office to get a cold. Now you're not even going to get the cold anymore. It's like you have a protective immunity bubble around you.
Thank you, Seb. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. From now until Columbus Day, Balance of Nature is offering a $25 off and free shipping on your first preferred order of Balance of Nature. This special is good between now and Columbus Day. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. David is in Peoria. Hello, David.
Hi, Steph.
How are you?
Hey, it makes me sick. I'm very good. And you? I hope you're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. But you sound like you're about to tell me you're also sick.
Yes,
okay.
I'm sick of watching the Democrats project their bad behavior on the Republicans and everybody else. It even goes right down to Matt Lauer.
Yeah,
the revelation that this guy was actually raping somebody, and it occurs to me that the timeline might be exactly what they accused Trump of. And it's almost as though they changed the names just to fit their narrative and protect their colleague in the press, Matt Lauer.
What's interesting to me about this Matt Lauer allegation is why the attention on him right now? Why is it so much about him and so little about Harvey Weinstein? This book written by Ronan Farrow. It's going to be a heck of a book, I gather. It's probably going to shoot right to the number one spot on the New York Times bestseller list. But it does go into all of these accusations and discoveries he's found. I guess one of the reasons it's highlighting Matt Lauer is you may recall Ronan Farrow worked for NBC when he was writing about Harvey Weinstein, right? And NBC spiked his story. They wouldn't run his story. So he took it to another place. I think it was the New Yorker, wasn't it? And he won a Pulitzer Prize for it. It was that good of a reporting job, and NBC just, I guess, had some serious what would you call it, conflict of interests in seeing someone taken down for allegations of sexual misconduct or really sexual abuse.
Absolutely.
It's a big black eye on NBC. It really is. And it's a big black eye on a lot in the media and a lot in the Democratic Party. There's this element in the book that's kind of interesting about Hillary Clinton's engagement in this. Harvey Weinstein evidently asked Hillary Clinton if she could use, you know, her influence to get Ronan Farrow to back off of the reporting on him. And when Ronan Farrow was writing a separate book about foreign policy and tried to interview Hillary Clinton, Hillary Clinton's agent said, not with what you're doing in regard to Harvey Weinstein. So the message was delivered, and he didn't get that interview with her. The message was delivered. It makes me sick, as you say, David, about the Democratic Party's projection. But it makes me sick that Hillary Clinton right now is getting media interviews for a book she's written about women and female empowerment, when it's all very, very clear that she was doing everything she could to keep and put a quietus on the indictment of Harvey or the accusations about Harvey Weinstein. This is only second, of course, to the quietus she was trying to put on the indictments against her husband for much the same kind of behavior. There is no reason Hillary Clinton should be, at least to me or that I can see, saluted or celebrated as any kind of feminist hero, much less any other kind of hero.
She should be an enemy of the feminist movement.
I should think
so. Absolutely.
I should think so. She had this very curious statement. No one's been able to explain it to me. Maybe you can, or maybe someone else can. She was asked in an interview on this book tour last week what's the bravest thing she's ever done, and she said staying married to Bill Clinton. How does that work if you're a feminist? It's brave to stay married to a serial sexual abuser and man who cheats on you in his marriage. Is that a brave thing to do? Is that the brave move? Maybe. I mean, maybe. I have heard some women say, this is territory I want to walk into delicately. I have heard some women say there are many reasons women, some very noble women, will choose to stay married to their husband even, you know, if he's wandered off the reservation. And I think I understand some of those. I can appreciate certain of those things, I suppose. I don't like it. I don't support it. It wouldn't be my call, my advice, or my choice. But I do get it for the sake, perhaps, of young children or, I don't know, something like that. But to say it's a brave move to stay there, I don't know.
Yeah, but
I think
that,
women who have to leave or men who have to leave their cheating spouse or an abusing spouse or a criminal spouse, I think that I got to tell you, something tells me that's the braver move.
Yeah. She also attacked those girls. She was ahead of the attack squad.
Of course she was. Of course she was. You bet. She and Jim Carville together. You betcha. In fact, I think it was the overzealousness on Jim Carville's part that animated, frankly, the entire impeachment process, as memory serves. You remember Paula Jones made these accusations that weren't legal. She didn't make any legal accusations or legal claims. She was talking about, you know, her assignations with Bill Clinton. I think she said it was unwanted, but she had not sued anyone at any point. And Jim Carville, what was his line? Can I say it? Am I allowed to say it?
You drag
a dollar bill through a trailer park. You never know what you're going to catch. Something like that. It was that kind of overzealous statement that made her say, "Well, the hell with this. I'm suing for my civil rights," and that is ultimately what led to impeachment. Do people remember why Bill Clinton was impeached for perjury? Do you remember why he was impeached for perjury? It wasn't just something about his private sexual life. It was because he perjured himself in a civil rights lawsuit by a victim of his sexual harassment, a victim who he ultimately had to pay almost $1 million to.
And he violated the law that he himself signed.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. This goes back to the kind of the female whistleblower protection, right? Whistleblower is the wrong word, but victim protection. Yes. About not having to, about being able to, yes, being able to discover past patterns of behavior, but without going after the woman who does it. It's an issue I have a little bit of a civil libertarian concern about, but notwithstanding, yeah. Do remember, as Hillary Clinton may try and brush off this impeachment of Bill Clinton, it was for perjury in a civil rights lawsuit against him. A civil rights lawsuit against him he ultimately had to pay nearly $1 million to the victim for. Please do remember all that. Thanks, David. I'm Seth. We'll be right back.
Oh.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If it's 34 minutes past the hour, it is time for our Culture and Economy Update with John Dombrowski from Grand Canyon Planning Associates. His website is grandcanyonplanning.com. John, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, John, is there a state, you know, I was just listening to that song and he's singing about, you know, on his way to North Carolina, which I've been to. Is there a state you have not been to that you would like to go to? Kind of a bucket list state?
Well, you know,
Or is there a state you just have never, well, I can't ask you that now that I've asked you one that you haven't been to that you'd like to because we'll diss that state.
You know, I grew up on the East Coast and I really never spent much time in the Northeast.
Oh, is that right?
And I'd like to see the leaves fall. You know, I moved out here when I was relatively young, so.
Western Mass? Have you not done that?
No.
It's a ton of fun. Can I tell you what to do when you're out there?
Sure, next time I go. Or if I ever go.
Please do. There are some great museums out there in Western Mass.
My
favorite one is the Norman Rockwell Museum. You've got to go see it. It's a ton of fun.
I would love to do that.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what I'd love to do. Okay.
An interesting segue because you and I opened an interesting conversation yesterday about people working in their retirement. We didn't do the other side of that coin, which is what do a lot of retirees do to keep from going insane in their retirement?
What do they do in retirement? Right. How do they spend their day?
Right.
So I will ask you when you retire, what do you want to do? What do you think you want to do right now if you were just off the top?
I know exactly what I'm going to do.
What's that?
I'm going to go move to Papeete, which is part of Fiji.
Tahiti.
I've been there. You have?
Yes.
Why were you there?
I went to the Tahitian Islands. We did a little cruise to all the islands. I did scuba diving with the sharks. It was fantastic.
So you would go again? You'd recommend?
It was amazing.
The reason I want to go is it's in two songs that I like. It's in a Jimmy Buffett song called Somewhere Over China, and it's in Crosby, Stills, and Nash's song Southern Cross. And I figured if it's in two of my favorite songs, I got to go.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty good.
That's my answer.
Well, a lot of people in retirement, what they think they want to do, they think they want to travel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spend more time with family, visiting with people. That's kind of what they're thinking. But here's what it talks about in a recent study that was done here. And it talks about, this is interesting, how current retirees do in regards to what they thought they would do in retirement. The numbers are, it says, little concerning. According to the BLS study, retirees are currently allocating about 9.5 hours of their week to leisure activities like travel, recreation, and reading.
Mm-hmm.
That seems promising. It says, unfortunately, the bulk of that time is 5.42 hours, to be exact, it says, spending watching TV.
Oh, really?
The rest is spent on things like relaxing.
Oh, really?
And then other activities like travel, and that's a whopping 3 hours and 6 minutes.
No kidding.
Isn't that something?
It is. No one's saying they're listening to talk radio, I guess.
Well, maybe that's part of the television and, you know, watching and listening to the radio and TV. But, I mean, that's not exactly what we thought, right? So why are people choosing this? Well, in some cases, Seth, it may be because they've entered retirement financially unprepared, right?
They really don't
have the resources to do the things that they thought they wanted to do in retirement. So, I mean, in reality, the key here is have a plan. We talked about this the other day. No matter what it is, have a plan. And then ultimately work your plan every day or every month or each year to try to get you to that point to where you can do the things that you think you want to do. Now, if you do retire and then you don't do them, well, that's okay. Then that's your choice.
Yeah.
But don't let money be the reason why you can't do certain things that you thought were going to be important to you.
Interesting.
So that's kind of where this whole article goes around. It talks about dreaming big, but also having a plan in place to allow you to get there. And that's critical with anything in life, right, Seth? When we go to our jobs, we have a plan. We have something.
So will you work on
every day
on a plan with me so I can retire in Papeete?
Absolutely. I'd love to do that.
Okay.
If I can come visit.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm going to be a little lonely out there, I think. Yeah, I'm going to be looking for friends.
The people were wonderful. Were wonderful there, and it was just a great trip. We had it was a little private, like a cruise boat, and it was just Tracy and I say was probably the best trip we ever took.
That is really good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. So I hope important ears are listening to this.
Yes.
Okay.
So lots going on in the market today. We saw a nice resurgence again yesterday and today, and futures are up again. So it's all because of the president basically tweeting saying that he's going to be meeting with China for the talks and, you know, giving a little bit of hope to some type of a agreement, whether that's a small agreement, but things happen in steps. So anything that's positive is going to be good for the market.
John Dombrowski, thank you for everything, sir.
Thank you, sir. Securities and Advisory Services offered to Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grant King and Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC, are not affiliated. We have a workshop this Saturday at our company on Social Security Planning, 480-991-1055, or go to the website to sign up.
Nice.
Thank
Grand
you, sir.
GrandCanyonPlanning.com.
Yes,
talk
sir.
To you later, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I am Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960 is our number. Gene is in Phoenix. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Seth. How are you?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
Great. I am a longtime listener, and my son Stuart called you about 2 months ago, and he really enjoyed that experience chatting with
you. Oh, that's wonderful. Tell him to call again. That's sweet of you to say, and you call again. Make yourself at home here, both of you.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Hey, I'm an entrepreneur and an engineer and that type of thing. And one of the ideas that came to me, if we rewind a little bit to the Elizabeth Warren's presentation on the Jon Stewart show, where he basically summarized and said, well, hey, isn't this like public education? And that, you know, if enough people just pool their money together, we could greatly reduce rates and improve services. Basically, would you say that's a fair characterization?
It might have been. I'm thinking of the Stephen Colbert show, right? That one.
Yeah.
That is fair. I remember he was hammering her on what it would cost, and would middle class taxes go up, and he hit her pretty hard for not fessing up to the fact that she was going to increase middle class taxes to come up with the, you know what it's going to cost, $3 trillion a year.
Yeah, so it obviously I think
$3 trillion a year. $3 trillion, not billion, $1 trillion a year.
Yeah, so people like us that actually understand and get math, it means something. But
I mean, what's our whole annual federal budget? Just under $4 trillion. Yeah, I mean, my gosh, he's going to double the federal budget on this. Go ahead.
My point is though he kind of tried to characterize it that if everybody just pooled their money together, i.e., public education, we could all get better services, and we'd all pay a little bit, and the world would be better, and somewhere the words kumbaya are sung, and the math turns magical.
Mm-hmm.
And the point I have about that is, if that were true, couldn't United Healthcare or Acme Insurance or ABC, couldn't they just lower their rates and monopolize it to the point where that would come to fruition? And if that is, then why haven't they done it? And it seems to be the hole in their argument.
Yeah, Gene, you're making a really good point. First of all, it's a really good point. So I think there's a danger, obviously. I mean, I think you're being serious with a sarcasm, right? I mean, there is a danger, obviously, in having the government go into business with a private sector to achieve a government desiderata, right? Because we worry about crony capitalism and the like. But you're absolutely right. If this was so easily doable, you would think some smart genius at one of these big healthcare companies would have already done it. But they can't. And why can't they? Because they can't afford
to. Because it doesn't work.
Right. It doesn't work. We kind of tried some of that with Obamacare. And what happened? What happened? These health insurance companies fled the marketplace. Now, you're in a different position than I am, I think, probably. But I can tell you, I have yet to meet someone in Arizona who has told me that since Obamacare, their rates have gone down and their choices were expanded. They have told me exactly the opposite. Their rates have gone up. Some have said they stayed about the same. But that the larger story is their rates have gone up and their choices contracted. They have less health care choice than they did before Obamacare. Now, you can go that way. But that just ain't America to me, and I don't think that's what Americans want.
It isn't. One of your callers about 2 weeks ago said the answer to global warming is, or the Paris Accord or whatever is, the word China. And he gave a simple one-word answer that helps break down the other side's argument. And I was hoping that the Elizabeth Warren and Acme Insurance argument would be the same counter you could have in the grocery store or whatever with somebody that's claiming it's the best thing ever.
Yeah, exactly. I like that you used Acme. That's a favorite name of mine. You know, you know where it comes from, Gene? That's probably why you used it.
I just know the Roadrunner.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's where we first learned of it. And it is actually an acronym for something. It's the acronym, you'll enjoy this, is the American Company That Makes Everything. Which,
oh,
so you used it perfectly, right? Because Elizabeth Warren wants an Acme government, right? She wants a government that can do everything, that can take care of you from cradle to grave. It's just a different model and a different idea of what government's purpose is. And, you know, it's not zero sum in the sense that a lot of political scientists like to teach. It's not a debate of unrestrained capitalism and social Darwinism versus, you know, survival of the fittest versus, an all-encompassing state socialism. That's not what the conservative movement has ever stood for. And I would urge people to read, the healthcare reform proposals of some great businessmen and innovative geniuses who happen to be conservative. Steve Forbes is a good start. He's not advocating social Darwinism any more than he's advocating socialism. But he isn't advocating common sense and transparency and better information and better incentives and better competition, which is what Obamacare robbed us of, which is why choices contracted and costs, of course, went up.
Hey, I've got one more question
for you
that you could maybe bring up later.
Sure.
It seems to be school budget override season.
Okay.
And I was just curious, at some point you could talk about that and thoughts.
You're going to drag me into that. Gene, you and I were friends up until 40 seconds ago.
Sorry.
You want me to get...
I
should do it. I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever owned a goldfish?
No, sir.
Okay. I need to find someone who knows something about goldfish. I tried to do a nice thing for the office today. I tried to do a nice and fun thing for the office, which is what I try and do every day, Gene. That's my everyday, as you can imagine about me. And, we had this nice, I don't know what you would call it, bowl, glassine or glass bowl that an employee put on the front desk of the office where the waiting room is, the lobby. And I thought, that would be nice to have two goldfish in it. Just help with the calm Pacific nature of the atmosphere attitude. Right? Right?
Yeah.
And we've all had goldfish as kids. I mean, it's a simple thing. You go to the pet store or the goldfish store. You come back in a plastic baggie. You have a goldfish or two. You put them in.
Yeah.
And all's well. End of story. Easy breezy. Right? Oh, my gosh. I walk in with these two things and employees came from out of the woodwork yelling at me. These aren't goldfish. You can't have two males. They're not even the right breed. They're what? They're Siamese fighter fish, which they aren't. What were they calling them, Anthony? What did they? Huh? Beta fish, which I'd never even heard. A simple thing. It was a simple thing. And people have been waging, placing bets here, Gene. Gambling is going on here about which one's going to die at the mouth of the other. It's the worst thing I've ever seen. They have taken a nice, simple Boy Scout kind of innocent guy bringing in goldfish like a little Linus, and they've turned it into Thunderdome, Gene.
Yeah. Well, Seth, the entrepreneur in me wants to sell tickets, so that'll be good.
All right. You can never call again. You're off the list. I kid.
Thanks, Seth. I appreciate it.
They've taken Linus and Peanuts and turned it into Thunderdome. That's what they've done here. 602-508-0960. I'll be right back. Bill, it didn't start early enough. I think start where I'm asking for the golden. Yeah, okay. Welcome back to the Seth Leifson Show. Yeah, looking for a couple honest people. Back to you, Nancy. The Wall Street Journal editorializes today, and quite right. The White House letter that I was quoting earlier in the day that White House counsel sent to Speaker Pelosi, telling her that President Trump won't cooperate with her impeachment inquiry is causing heartburn among all the usual suspects. Readers should ignore the fainting spells over a constitutional crisis. Because remember, we were in a constitutional crisis a year ago, long before any of this. I think we're about a year into it. And keep in mind that this is largely a political response to a political attack by House Democrats. Your inquiry is constitutionally invalid and violative of due process, wrote White House counsel Pat Cipollone, who lists the due process protections the House is denying Mr. Trump as it pursues impeachment. He's right about due process, but wrong to dress this up in constitutional clutches. Mr. Cipollone is trying to make a political point about the unprecedented secret and unfair way the House is proceeding on impeachment. And on that, he's entirely correct. As we've been writing, Mrs. Pelosi has refused to let the House vote on a resolution authorizing an official impeachment inquiry with rules that define the scope and procedures. And she has her agents out there lying for her, as Hillary Clinton did with Judy Woodruff yesterday. We played the audio where Hillary Clinton says, when I was on the impeachment inquiry panel during Watergate, we didn't have a full House vote. We just had it referred to one of the committees. Lie, 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 lie. As I wrote yesterday, there was indeed a full House vote in 1974. It got 404 votes. That's not the vote of a committee. You don't get 404 votes on a committee. It was introduced by Peter Rodino and referred to the House Committee on Impeachment after the full House vote. So Hillary Clinton clearly was lying to save Mrs. Pelosi's skin. Why do I say clearly lying and not misremembering? Because Hillary Clinton was on the committee. She was on the committee. Clearly, she remembers what took place. What she doesn't understand is that we all have the ability to look up roll call votes from the House of Representatives from 1974, as we can do from 1973, as we can do from 1994, and as we can do from 1998, where she also tried to whitewash her husband's impeachment. It's gotten to the point, truly has, where if Hillary Clinton or Nancy Pelosi tell you it's raining outside, you're going to want to look out the window for independent confirmation. I suppose we probably, with every sentence they utter, ought to do that. To the smartphones, someone once said, and I think whenever they talk, that's where we got to go. 602-508-0960. Did a little bit on what's going on with Syria and Turkey a couple days ago. From one perspective, want to give you another one from an expert of ours that I like very much. Michael Rubin's going to join us at the top of the next hour. Don't go away. We will be right back.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.